News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Big hour coming your way. We go to the border with Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. And yes, there is a huge influx. We found out that 353,000 since September of illegal aliens have been flown into various cities around the country, 22,000 of which are gone to New York. Lawrence Jones will also be helping us out, too. So we have a lot going on today. We'll be following it all, including what's the latest with the Donald Trump court cases and what have you. And we'll be taking your calls, too. And you can also write us, BrianKilmeade.com. Just click on comments. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
I would hope that Netanyahu, he's only interested in his own political survival. Does that sound familiar? And that's just the way it's been. It's a tragedy. Netanyahu is a tragedy.
What a clown. That is former Speaker of the House, who's a tragedy herself, that she's never been called out for irresponsible statements and actions like tearing up the State of the Union and continuing to work behind the scenes to undermine whatever Republican happens to be in power. World versus Israel, as the pound-for-pound strongest nation of the world sets a date for a Rafah invasion and the U.S. brokers a ceasefire, Michigan activists chant, "Death to America," yes, in Michigan, while the White House feels the pressure to let Israel fight it out alone.
Number two.
It's not surprising that New York doesn't want to give up its grasp, especially Manhattan. But 61% of those people polled think that Donald Trump is guilty of these crimes.
That's true. Trump trials dominating the news as rulings and motions fly around the court today and yesterday. We try to make sense of it all and break them up.
Number one.
It's finally going to be forgiven. But I'm not stopping here. Today, I'm proud to announce 5 major actions to continue to relieve student debt for more than 30 million Americans since I started my administration.
So irresponsible, and he's bragging about defying the Supreme Court. He continues to do that, forgiving student loans, sticking all of us with the bill. Plus, Trump takes a bold but calculated decision on abortion, leaving the decision to the states. What does this do to Dems' top issue for 2022, and what will it be for 2024? We'll discuss it. So let's talk about student loans first. Remember when Nancy Pelosi said this? Cut 7.
People think that the president of the United States has the power for debt forgiveness. He does not. He can postpone. He can delay. But he does not have that power. That has to be an act of Congress. So that's not even a discussion. Not everybody realizes that. But the president can only postpone, delay, but not forgive.
Here's how ridiculous that is, because she did exactly that. Nancy Pelosi was right when the Supreme Court, when the Republicans said, you just can't forgive student loans for kids. What age? 18, 22, 28, 35? I'm sorry they got student debt, but they signed on to it. Maybe you can cut their interest rate, I'm thinking. Maybe you could lengthen their payments in order to get that pay monthly nut down, possibly. Parent loans, definitely. Making a massive effort to get the price of private colleges down to an affordable rate. But you can't just unilaterally do it and stick us with the bill. What about those people that became vocational, went through the vocational way, started working with their hands, went into construction, went into truck driving, or went and did their own thing because they didn't want to sign off on student loans? Their parents did not have the money. They did not have a resource to go to. And now you turn around and go, wait, I'm forgiving their student loan? So Billy gets to go to college for 4 years at the time of his life, and he doesn't even have to pay back the debt? How is that fair? And the president's taking a bow. Cut 8.
Tens of millions of people's debt was literally about to get canceled. But then some of my Republican friends and elected officials and special interests sued us, and the Supreme Court blocked us. But that didn't stop us. No, I mean it sincerely. We continue to find alternatives passed to reduce student debt payments that are not challengeable. And altogether, my administration has taken the most significant action to provide student debt relief ever in the history of this country. We started by fixing 2 existing programs to get more people student debt relief than they're entitled to.
I just don't get it. I mean, why is that okay? What about car loans? What about if he says if you're under 20, if you're under 35, we'll make five payments for you? You gonna vote for that person? It's almost like bribery. I mean, they're doing it in an election year. The other big story is what Donald Trump did yesterday. We played it just as we were starting our show. When it comes to abortion, he came out and said, leave it to the states. Now, to me, that puts pressure on Democrats. So if you're saying it's up to the states, so tell me what week do you think is palatable to go for an abortion? Any week, any time? Because that's right now what you're saying. Any week, any time. Here's the problem for Democrats. Donald Trump did a good job taking this issue back, saying, yeah, I'm happy Roe v. Wade was done, but the country is not there yet. So I'm saying leave it to the states. The problem is when it comes to the states, if people are motivated because they know a referendum is on the ballot, it could really change the results of statewide elections in U.S. Senate and House races. No doubt about it. Now, for Vice President Kamala Harris and for Joe Biden, it didn't stop them from mischaracterizing Trump's stance. Cut one.
The former president yet again declaring how proud he is of his responsibility for overturning Roe v. Wade. He yet again said he's proudly responsible for overturning Roe v. Wade. And one has to ask, proudly responsible that one in three women of reproductive age now live in a state with an abortion ban? Proudly responsible that doctors and nurses can now be jailed in some states for life for providing care? Proudly responsible that states have passed bans with no exception even for rape or incest?
So that was Vice President Kamala Harris on the tarmac where he and the president love to talk, always when there's a chopper in the background or a jet engine on. So she says that, how dare you? Lawrence Jones has just joined us, fresh off Fox and Friends. She says, how dare Donald Trump brag about overturning Roe v. Wade? And what about all those doctors that go to jail if they perform an abortion in a state where it's not allowed?
I don't think it was a brag. It was an attempt to let everyone know I returned it to the states. And if you're, say you have the liberal worldview of abortions, you want to be in a state where they allow that to happen. And Donald Trump is not saying that he wants to limit the scope of that. Now, you know, I've gotten pushed back, and I've been pro-life pretty much my entire life. I tell my story about my family. My mom had me very young. And there's a lot of Republicans that are upset right now that feels like that we should be fighting the war on a national level. But that's never been the argument, bro. The argument is always return it back to the states. The former president is not bragging about it. He's saying, look, I made a campaign promise. I kept that commitment. We've been losing down ballot
right
as a result of this. So, you know what? I'm going to give you all the strategy to win.
So he also saw maybe the poll that talked about, as of right now, Fox News asked voters, likely vote registered voters, what's the most important, and we'll rank them, most important issues for you to vote on. Economy, 61%. Election integrity, 53%. Immigration, 48%. Healthcare, 46%. Abortion, 41%. So that's fifth and sixth.
Right.
So that's important because when it was number one, Republicans found themselves on defense because they caught the car for the longest time. And now we have people who are more for abortion than were before Roe v. Wade was overturned. Here's Julie Chavez Rodriguez, the campaign director of Biden-Harris. Cut three.
From our perspective, Donald Trump owns the state of abortion rights in our country. This morning, he continued to brag about the fact that he is proudly the person responsible for this. He has promised to lead the charge in getting a national abortion ban passed.
So that's what they're going to hope for. They're going to keep on saying that, but she's not looking for an abortion ban. If you come out and say Donald Trump's looking for an abortion ban, that's just wrong. That's just like saying he's 6'7", like his son. He's not. He's saying that clearly, not for an abortion ban.
But, Brian, they're trying to create this an issue because it's the only issue that they found some success on. I mean, if you're Joe Biden, are you going to say, hey, I'm going to run on the economy? Oh, okay. All right, I'm going to run on the border? Oh, okay. I mean, just say on foreign policy, I'm going to – when the world is falling apart, when what you have in Ukraine, what you have in Israel, what you have now with Taiwan, China making a move on Taiwan. So if you're the current president, then you have to use this issue to get some sort of report. The last thing I'll say, the suburban women. We know that is the one Achilles heels of Donald Trump. It's rallying those suburban women. If he could make this the issue, Donald Trump takes it away by saying, listen, I've done what I said I was going to do. States, go duke it out. But if Biden can make that the issue for the suburban women, he could get some success. I don't think it's going to work just because there's just so many crises,
right,
on as you just laid out. But he can make a way. He can make a play for it.
Right. I want you to hear this guy, Alex Burns of Politico. He's director of politics at Politico. He just said, listen, when it comes to Trump, you shouldn't generalize because the guy has a way of just bucking the Republican orthodoxy. Cut five.
I do think there is a consistency to Donald Trump, not in terms of his ideology, but in terms of when he gets uncomfortable with the sort of consensus views of the Republican Party. We saw it after Parkland, that he had that moment of wavering on whether maybe we should do gun control because he sees the same headlines as everybody else and reacts on a visceral level. We see it now on abortion. He clearly isn't comfortable being where the right flank of the party wants him to be on this issue. I don't think he's going to oversee some pullback from the American-Israeli relationship, but I do think there's a familiar set of instincts at play there when he sees these kinds of images and these kinds of stories and just sort of balks at the idea of putting his name on it.
So he's normal.
Yeah.
So in other words, this guy's treating him at Politico like a normal candidate.
Yeah.
Isn't it odd? Oh, is it almost jarring to hear somebody using their analyst skills on Donald Trump rather than try to broad brush him?
Well, I think what's happening is, one, there's some buyer's remorse. And number two, you know, they say Donald Trump wavers. I just think he's a practical negotiator. I think he has some red lines where he's just not good. You can't convince him on those topics. But I think that there is 40 to 50% of the issues that he's willing to negotiate. And, you know, I think when you talk about the country, what's best for the country, do you want a country run by a bunch of staffers and academics in the White House? Or do you want someone that was a former businessman that's going to bring both sides in,
right,
agree or disagree with him, and let them duke it out and then make a decision?
All right, I want to get a few more minutes with Lawrence on the other end, so I don't want to take too much time. And then we'll welcome in Lieutenant Colonel Alan West and then take your calls in about a half hour, so I don't want you waiting on the line. Lawrence, as we go to break, anything our audience should know about you?
Anything they should know about
me?
Go
ahead. Don't skirt the question.
Well, I say this.
Why? Go ahead.
I used to be an Obama guy.
And?
You
started as an Obama guy.
I started off
as for Obama.
I worked for Obama, 15 years old, my first presidential campaign. Used to make 100 and some calls a day for his candidacy. Then he ticked me off because he didn't do anything for my community. And now I've been libertarian. I'm more conservative now than libertarian.
And will you, if I ever run for office, will you work for me or will you work against me?
Brian, I'll help you get elected.
Back in a moment.
I would.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Those were the conditions in terms of security and law and order that President Biden inherited. Mm-hmm. And just in ordinary cities and streets, crime at an elevated level that had begun to happen under President Trump. So we need to talk about the reality here. And again, there is a lot of funding and a lot of energy going into telling a different story, especially on ideological news outlets and online. But the simple facts and the simple reality are right here staring us in the face, including the fact that I can safely walk my dog to the Capitol today in a way that you couldn't do when we all got here.
Lawrence Jones is here. Pete Buttigieg saying the crime has gotten so much better. It has not gotten so much better. Pete Buttigieg says, I can walk my dog to the Capitol. I couldn't before I got here. Lawrence Jones, do you agree with that? That things are so much better now that he can walk his dog?
Well, he can walk his dog because he has a Secret Service protection detail. The average day American can't. Carjackings are up there. We just did a report on Fox and Friends on that. Plus, the crime is out of control. You got these young kids that are assaulting everyone. And look, his reality is his reality, but it's not congruent with the average day American, especially in D.C.
So an independent group of law enforcement officials and analysts claim violent crime are much higher than the figures reported by the FBI. Violent crime statistics are messed up. It says the Coalition for Law and Order and Safety released April 2024, just yet last week, called Assessing America's Crime Crisis, Trends, Causes, and Consequences. Identify four potential causes for the increase in crime in most major cities. Depolicing, which means to less arrest, right? De-incarceration, because well, many people in jail, then you turn around and go, look, less people in jail, things getting better. De-prosecution, we witness that every day, and politicization of the criminal justice system. Together, you get numbers that you could tell us a positive story, but it's not the real story.
Well, yeah, also you're not prosecuting people anymore. You've changed the arrest standards. You've decriminalized things that used to be criminal. But should we be surprised about Mayor Pete, now Secretary Pete? He didn't do well as a mayor. The people in this town did not like him. He had to correct, as people would say, identity politics. People thought that he was a great speaker, and so Biden puts him into a cabinet position. Yeah. I don't think we can name one thing that he's done well as the Secretary of Transportation.
Well, he wants to get that bridge built. This is his latest chance. Listen to Joe Biden talk about crime and what he's done on back on March 1st. Cut 20.
Last year, the United States had one of the lowest rates of all violent crime, of all violent crimes in more than 50 years.
What's he talking about? Nobody thinks that. Just like the economy, the numbers may look good to you, what they put in front of you, but that's not the reality people feel.
It's not the reality. And when you compare it to the pre-pandemic numbers, it's not that well. It's not the best story to tell. But again, I think this White House, again, with all the academics that are there, they want to tell that story. But, you know, Joe Biden used to be the politician that related to average day Americans. Right. I didn't like his policies, but at least he could go give a good speech, talk to people, and be empathetic. He's not being that Joe right now because Joe may not be there.
What do you mean?
Well, there mentally. He may not be there.
Well, he might not be there at all anymore. I mean, there was this, but we're talking about he was totally changed because I asked Henry Cuellar once. I said, I understand it. When you talk to the president, what is he? Number one, he doesn't want to talk to you. And he goes, number two is when he does talk to me, he basically, in his view, was captured by the extreme left. So if he had a moderate like Axelrod as his chief of staff, Axelrod, I'm like, yeah, don't listen to those guys.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have that with them. It's nowhere around. It's Jeff Zients. And the other guy that was there before doesn't even seem as thrilled with Joe Biden running again.
Brian, did you think you would see the day where Joe Biden was more extreme than President Barack Obama? I mean, I didn't see that day coming. He was known as Scranton Joe and all of that. And it seems like that. Well, I don't know if it was the New York Times or Washington Post, but there was this intel detailed article put about Joe Biden and how much he tries to compete with Obama and be better than Obama. And he hates when people bring him up in conversations because he didn't feel like he was valued as much in the administration. There's something weird between those two that's going on right now. But apparently Obama is calling the campaign every single day to give them advice.
Now think about this. Gore and Clinton don't talk.
That's
Bush and
true.
Cheney don't talk. Obama and obviously you just said there and now Pence and Trump don't talk.
I don't think they'll be talking.
How soon till we're not talking? Yeah.
Brian, it'll be a temporary thing. I'll talk
we'll
to you the next day.
It.
Exactly.
I'm too big a person.
That's right. No grudges.
Anything.
That's
promise.
Exactly right.
Thanks, Lawrence.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I say it's unfortunate that some people try to peddle a story for, you know, of nostalgia for something that just wasn't true. I say that, I mean, look at the numbers, right? The numbers don't lie. You know, the last president kept talking about an infrastructure week that never materialized. President Biden has delivered on an infrastructure decade where we're seeing projects, shovels hit the ground in communities all across the country. And it's just, it's irresponsible to suggest anything else. I don't know what to say about it.
MSNBC was where Julie Hsu, who is the acting labor director, was laughing at the fact that people say their life was better under Trump. She says, how could that be? And they giggle. They think it's funny. And Michael Steele, former RNC chair, I don't know who caught him, if he's being held hostage against his will or not. But here's the deal. Why would people think that they are better off under Trump? Gas was $2.39. Now it's double that. It's up 50%. The real average of weekly earnings was up was at 8.2%. Under Biden, it was 4.2%. And inflation, 5.6% on average for Biden. For Trump, 1.9. 30-year loan. You want to go get a mortgage? The average interest rate was 2.7. Now it's 7%. Maybe that's why nobody's laughing at that question or that assumption. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West joins us now. Colonel, what for you is the difference in the economies, for you personally, for you and your family?
Well, it's very simple. I mean, you just said when I go to the gas pump and I see immediately the change in the gasoline prices. And here we are in oil and natural gas rich Texas, and we still see this exorbitant rise in the gas prices. And then also when you think about Port Arthur, Texas was the number one exporter of liquefied natural gas. And now the Biden administration put a kibosh on our exportations of liquefied natural gas, which if you want to undermine Vladimir Putin and his efforts, you know, export our liquefied natural gas. So those are the simple things. And you're right, bacon, eggs, I mean, food commodity prices, you see that when you go to buy turkey and all of these things. So I don't know who these people are and what they think they're trying to peddle on the American people, because when they go out every day, they see the difference.
So I don't know if either candidate has approached this housing. I mean, there's a housing shortage in this country, and these corporations are doing this thing. And I saw the feature on 60 Minutes. I thought, that's an interesting investment. Hedge funds are buying up middle to working class family houses, and they're buying them, fixing them up, putting people in, making it's no option to buy. And they jack up the rents. So if you want to stay in the neighborhood, you got to deal with corporations, hedge funds, where instead of going to buy from the West family because you want to move to a bigger house, I'm buying from a corporation. I'm not sure that's in America's best interest. I'm not sure that should not be reined in by some well-meaning mayor.
No, it's not in America's best interest. And I think you see the reconfiguration of neighborhoods. I mean, this was something that the Housing and Urban Development Department under Barack Obama tried to do. And we see that happening even here in Dallas as well. But the other thing that is really hurting, and these are minority communities that are really severely being affected, the property taxes. The property taxes that are just so exorbitantly high and people can't stay, and they're losing their generational family houses. And guess what? You're right. The corporations or, you know, big developers come in and buy these places. And that just means that once again, you are cutting off the ability of generations to hand over property and home ownership to their respective, descendants. And so all of these things are coming together. And of course, when you have high interest rates, because they're trying to cover for Biden's failed policies, then, you know, that precludes a lot of people from being able to sell their house because nobody is buying right now with these interest rates so high for mortgages.
Right. I mean, if you have cash, if you're able to sell a house for a money in New York and able to use that money to buy it in Florida or Texas, it's great. But keep in mind, there's no state tax. Gotcha. Maybe, but they get you on tolls and they get you on property taxes. And that's the one thing. Don't think that if you're going to go to Florida and property taxes are going to be cheap. Is it? And it sounds like it's the same thing in Texas.
Yes, it very much so is. And that's one of the number one issues, you know, for every legislative session. And, you know, the taxpayers here in Texas are tired of just crumbs being handed to them. And, you know, how can it be that you are taxing people on their property? So, in other words, Brian, here I am in the West family household here. We pay off our house. We own our house. We really don't own our house, because if we don't pay our property taxes, then they come in and take our house away from us. So what is the American dream right now? And so that is something that the Labor Secretary obviously does not understand.
Well, how about more money that you guys would have if you'd have to spend literally billions on your own border security? Do people talk about that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely so. And I think that one of the things that they should be looking at is the remittances that we send to the federal government from the state of Texas. Maybe we should withhold some of those remittances, because the federal government is not owning up to their constitutional duty and responsibility. And this is a burden on the Texas taxpayer, because these are our dollars that are being used for something that the federal government is constitutionally supposed to do. And, oh, by the way, now they're telling Texans that you can't do anything about it. So you just have to sit back and allow millions upon millions of illegals to come into your country, and then you have to provide them taxpayer funded benefits.
Well, in California, they actually give them health care as well as a $1,000 experimental guaranteed wage. Can you imagine how you'd feel if you're in California?
Yeah, I imagine how our veterans feel. You know, veterans who are on average per day taking their lives to the tune of 20 to 21, because we have a Veterans Administration system that says, here's a bag of pills and go and do well. And, you know, we can't do anything about your PTSD, or we're not going to try to open up these hyperbaric chambers for you so that we can help you with your traumatic brain injury. But, oh, by the way, if you come across the border illegally and you're a single military age male, we will give you free health care, and we will give you all of these other benefits. That's a slap in the face to our veterans.
I would think so. On a different note, much different note, we're watching some great basketball, and we're seeing women's at 18 million people watching women's basketball. I love it. There's no downside to
it. I was one of them.
And I just love it because the more women play sports, I think you learn the values and ethics, and then people watch sports. Sponsorship comes to sports. That means more people will pay. There'll be more opportunity. And I have two girls who were playing basketball and soccer through college. They both stopped playing basketball through high school. But they watched. And they never watched the WNBA, never watched college before. Hopefully it's a turning point. And women listening right now, know this. The problem is not men watching women's sports. The problem is women don't watch women's sports.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a quick – so that Dawn Staley, one of the finest coaches in America, she coached her team to a perfect season and beat Iowa and Caitlin Riley, but said this the day before the final, cut 32.
I'm under the opinion of if you're a woman, you should play. If you consider yourself a woman and you want to play sports or vice versa, you should be able to play. That's my opinion. You want me to go deeper?
Do you think transgender women should be able to participate?
That's your question. You want
basketball.
Me to ask? I mean, you want to ask? So I'll give you that. Yes, yes. So now, the barnstorm of people are going to flood my timeline and be a distraction to me on one of the biggest days of our game.
Well,
and I'm okay with that.
Okay, I'm glad you're okay with that. Do you really believe that she wants a guy playing against her team?
No, she wouldn't. She'd be the first one to complain about that if all of a sudden a 6'4", 6'5" biological male decided that he was going to play for the University of Tennessee or University of Alabama or any other SEC school other than University of South Carolina. Look, you know, Brian, I went to the University of Tennessee, and everyone remembers Pat Summitt. What an incredible coach. What an incredible job she did with women's basketball, and her and Gino Auriemma bringing that to the forefront. And now we see people like Dawn Staley that are really capitalizing on those early triumphs and victories that they made to get women's basketball to where it is. And for Dawn Staley to just say that we're going to undermine Title 10 and take Title 10, Title 9. I think it's Title 9. And take it away from women and take these opportunities away from young girls in sports like we see with Riley Gaines and her swimming exploits from the University of Kentucky. So we got to stand up for women's sports, and we got to stand up for women's athletics and all the great strides that they're making right now.
It's a joke. Piers Morgan says, so LeBron James gets up in the morning, decides he's a woman, he could play in the WNBA? Really? That's insane. But you know what the reality is? Leah Thomas, when he was a guy, was a marginal swimmer, but Division I swimmer. He decides he wants to be a woman and dominates in women. So if a UConn male player at the end of the bench or a practice player wants to play, Dawn Staley does not win the national championship. How does she feel about that?
Well, you know, it'll be interesting, like I say, when that person lines up on the other side. And, of course, when they go charging down the lane and one of her female players takes a charge from this individual and he puts her out for the rest of the season, one of her star players, I think she'd have a different perspective and a different opinion. So I don't understand why she would say something, you know, as insidious as this. She has benefited very much so from women's college basketball. She played on the National Olympic team. She was fantastic. And now she's basically saying that she supports the under undermining of the sport that she has been part of.
The NAIA, which is a small subset, a small part of the NCAA, is huge. NAIA has got other colleges, not as many, but they came out against this. Riley Gaines joined me yesterday to talk about her stance. Cut 34. You know, Riley Gaines is a Division I swimmer who protested against Leah Thomas at the University of Pennsylvania, now forms an organization to fight back against this. Cut 34.
Imagine in her day, Brian, right, if Carl Malone or David Robinson woke up one morning and said, I feel like a woman today. We would have no idea who Dawn Staley is. It's always funny to me how these things become okay to those who it has no influence upon. Dawn knows sure and well that she would never be a Hall of Famer if she played against men, period. So it's irresponsible and unfair for her and other retired female players like Sue Bird, Megan Rapinoe, Billie Jean King, and all sports to conveniently say they're now okay with this because what they're doing is pulling up the ladder behind them.
Right. So well said, correct? Do you think this will change, Colonel West? Do you think people will understand, sober up on this? It's not a matter of intolerance to people who are different, but it's a matter of being fair to women?
Yeah, it's amazing how you hear people talk about fairness, but they don't see the unfairness of this.
Yes.
And, you know, think about John Stockton. If he was to go one-on-one with Dawn Staley, John Stockton would dominate her, and Riley Gaines is absolutely right. We wouldn't know anything about her. So these people that have matriculated through and benefited from women college athletics, now for them to come back and say, oh, yeah, let's destroy women's college athletics. They're taking away future opportunities for young women. And I think that this is going to be a huge national issue because they are losing the support of the American people left and right on this. And we will see where it goes.
Absolutely. Colonel, thanks so much. Always great to talk to you about anything. There's nothing you can't handle. Colonel Allen West, thank you.
My pleasure. God bless, Brian.
Back at you. All right, we come back. It's your time to talk. First time today, 1-866-408-7669. Quick mention, hope to see everyone in Las Vegas, Henderson, Nevada, be specific, April 27th. VIP tickets available. I talked to you before the show. Answer all your questions on stage. It is awesome. It's called History, Liberty, and Laughs. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. Don't move.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I mean, you only have about 63% of the country that's even covered by these numbers. And what the media does is they generally find some salient point that works for them. They hammer it, hammer it, hammer it. You and I know how this works, right? It goes out to all the Biden proxies, and they lead with that story, and they hope that everybody's eyes glaze over. Numbers are numbers. Nobody really cares. The truth of the matter, though, is I actually think this is good for the right and good for Donald Trump. Why? Because nobody believes it. And as they continue to hammer this point, people know what they see and hear. And the reality is, as you point out, since 2019, we are up. If you take, for instance, the murder number, which generally the analysts like to use as the metric, we are up at our highest number for last year in aggregate murder numbers since 1996.
Wow. So that is Paul Morrow weighing in, detective and lawyer, weighing in on the deception in the numbers. They say the numbers are down with homicides, numbers are down with robberies, numbers are down with carjackings, but it's not how we feel and not what we think. And it's not that we're mental patients and are paranoid. We walk around scared or afraid of our own shadow, that like the governor of New York tends to indicate. What Paul Maher was saying is because people aren't getting arrested, the numbers are down. Well, arrests are down. Well, decarceration. Well, people are putting big emphasis on bail reform. So you're not putting people in jail. Well, the amount of people who are jailed goes down. Well, prosecution. We're not prosecuting as much because people aren't going, following through, making the arrest, not prosecuting because they don't think they can get the conviction. So they're not doing it. So the numbers look like they're going down. The only thing they can't hide is murders. You can't hide a body for the most part. You know, murders are murders. But assaults, carjackings, robberies, you've seen the adjustments. So if someone tells you other cities are safer than they've ever been, come on. You don't believe that. And it doesn't matter if I tell you that. And if I show you these numbers, you're not going to sign on to it because that's not the reality that you have. It's the same thing with the economy. Well, unemployment is so low. GDP is so much higher. Jobs added are so much greater. Okay. Trying to buy a house. It's at 6.7%. They got to play some points. I mean, get it down a little bit. Got to buy my first house. So if I got to do that, if the down payment's got to be double what it is, prices are a little bit high because it's definitely a seller's market. That never used to be the case, but that affects me. So don't tell me that no one thinks the real estate market's good. Nobody thinks that people are moving, selling, fixing up, refinancing. We're not going to refinance. We're not going to put that dormer on. We're not going to put in that garage. We're not going to make the put in a second floor. Because if I have to go take out money on my mortgage, it's going to be the interest rate's going to be way too high. And why would I take equity out of my house when I've got a 2.7% mortgage and I have a chance to go and I want to buy another house? Why would I build up this one, go get an interest rate at 6.7% and do that? But I might be able to get another house. I might be able to pay cash, perhaps. But all these things were not the case before. And if I keep telling you life's better, it's going to do nothing but tick you off. And that's what people like Pete Buttigieg were saying, as I brought up to Lawrence earlier. And here's the president of the United States. He said that crime is down all across the board. Pete Buttigieg trying to sell us how great everything is. Cut 21.
Those were the conditions in terms of security and law and order that President Biden inherited. Mm-hmm. And just in ordinary cities and streets, crime at an elevated level that had begun to happen under President Trump. So we need to talk about the reality here. And again, there is a lot of funding and a lot of energy going into telling a different story, especially on ideological news outlets and online. But the simple facts and the simple reality are right here staring us in the face, including the fact that I can safely walk my dog mm-hmm. to the Capitol today in a way that you couldn't do when we all got here.
I appreciate he served, and I guess it's great to go to Oxford. I know he sounds intelligent, but I have not learned a thing from how he'd govern or feel better that he's actually in charge. For him to make those stupid anecdotal statements as if things are better because you can hop on a bike and walk your dog with the Secret Service there and feel safe. By the way, I just got an email in from Frank. Frank says, Brian, please stop calling these cheating trans athletes she. Trans men are not women by trying to be woke using the pronouns. I apologize. My bad. Brian Kilmeade.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. This hour is going to be special. Congressman Victoria Sports is going to be with us. She thought she was going to retire, decided to stay with it. She's going to run for re-election. Glad about that. And we'll do a simulcast with Stuart Varney. And, of course, we'll take all your calls following all the breaking news. No eclipse to sidetrack us. We could focus exactly what matters most. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
I would hope that Netanyahu, he's only interested in his own political survival. Does that sound familiar? And that's just the way it's been. It's a tragedy. Netanyahu is a tragedy.
Nothing's a tragedy. You don't know how to fight a war. He does. Lost his brother in war. He's been at war. The whole country serves in war. They never wanted to go into Gaza. After October 7th, they had to go in there. I'm sorry, Nancy Pelosi. The way they're fighting does not fit your standard. World versus Israel. As the pound-for-pound strongest nation in the world, sets date for a Rafah invasion, the last enclave of Hamas holdouts. The U.S. is brokering a ceasefire, which seems really weighted against their ally. And meanwhile, Michigan activists in America chant death to America.
Number two.
It's not surprising that New York doesn't want to give up its grasp, especially Manhattan. But 61% of those people polled think that Donald Trump is guilty of these crimes.
Yeah, a myriad of crimes. And there's so many court cases out there right now. The Trump trials dominating some of the news, the rulings, the motions flying around court to court. We try to make sense of it.
Number one
is finally going to be forgiven. But I'm not stopping here. Today, I'm proud to announce 5 major actions to continue to relieve student debt for more than 30 million Americans since I started my administration.
Yeah. So lawless. Biden administration defies the Supreme Court, forgives billions of dollars in loans, makes us pay for it. Meanwhile, Donald Trump with some big news on his own. He talks about what he's doing with abortion, says leave it to the states, causing an uproar, some with his party, some with the enemy. But you know, among the people praising this, the New York Post editorial, which has not been that kind to him in the past. They did not want him to be the nominee. And we'll talk about that. So let's talk about the Trump trials. I've not gotten into that yet here on the Tuesday edition of the show. So a couple of things are happening. First off, the president of the United States wanted to get out of New York and did not want this trial to start next week. It looks like it will. He also wanted a new judge. It doesn't look like it's going to happen. He also wanted a different location if it was going to happen. That also got rejected. So all three of those things aren't going to happen. It looks like New York will be first. What exactly are they saying that he did? Well, they said that he falsified, lied about 34 business records, 12 ledger entries, 11 invoices, and 11 checks. But the problem is Michael Cohen is the source for all of it. The guy's got almost no credibility at all. The other thing you have is a court case in New York that most people know is a total sham and a fraud. Doesn't mean he's not going to get convicted of it, but New York Appeals Court can deny the venue change, can deny a new judge change, but now they have to go out there and actually fight the merits of the delay. They say this all happened in 2016, right before the election, to make sure they didn't have any problems. And meanwhile, they're talking about $10,000 to a couple of $100,000. Think about how much money flows in and out of campaigns. Think about how much we've been through since. Now you got to go back and handle this. Listen to some of the things that other prosecutors who are not fans of Donald Trump have pointed out, and I think are significant. When they talk about this case, they said prosecutors have suggested the overall scheme was a potential violation of federal and state tax election laws, as well as state tax laws. But Trump has not been charged with any other crimes in the case, making the felony counts for falsifying business records more than unusual. Quote from David Hochheiser, a New York criminal defense attorney, quote, if we prosecuted every corporation in New York that had a false filing or deduction for a felony, we'd have lots of prosecutions that doesn't generally happen. Why would you set a precedent with a case like this? Look at some of the questions they're asking the jury. So far, the judge said he will not ask prospective jurors if they like Donald Trump or not, but jurors will be asked if they read the New York Times and if they ascribe to a QAnon beliefs. All right, see how you answer there. If you want off the trial, just say, I'm pro-QAnon. Question for respective jurors, hush money, this one will count. Have you or a relative or close friend ever worked or volunteered for the Trump presidential campaign? All right, I guess that would disqualify you. How about this for a potential question? Have you, a relative, or close friend ever worked for a company or associated with Donald Trump's family? Okay. Which of the following print publications, cable and or network programs, or online media such as websites, blogs, or social media platforms do you visit, read, or watch? So if you say CNN, the defense wants you off. If you say Fox News, the prosecution wants you off, right? Would you ever gone to a rally for Trump? Listen to this question. Have you ever considered yourself a supporter or belonging to any of the following? And Pete, I'll ask you this. So let's say you want to be a potential juror. Did you ever participate in the QAnon movement?
Negative.
Proud Boys. Is that one of your boys?
Negative. No.
Oath Keepers. Does this sound familiar, Pete? Don't dodge the question. Oath Keepers.
I would have to say a big, big no.
Three percenters. I don't know.
What are the three percenters of? That's my question.
Right. How about this? The Boogaloo Boys. I did not know there were Boogaloo Boys. This is a new one.
Those guys are.
Right. So if you don't want to be on this jury, yeah, I'm a Boogaloo Boy. Can I be on? No, okay.
I'm going to use that in all facets of my life now. Like, I'm a Boogaloo Boy.
You're going to go right back to work.
Yep.
Boogaloo Boys are too pro Trump, evidently. You cannot be too pro Trump. So the question is, you know, I talked to some people and they say, you know, he's going to get convicted of this. How do you beat a New York jury? I'm not convinced. I think it's a weak case. Michael Cohen's a terrible witness. They're going to try to get Hope Hicks and some other people involved. I don't think they're going to turn on him because he didn't do anything wrong. And I just believe there's one person out there on a jury that will say, I can't go along with this. Here's Matt Whitaker, Cut 16.
It's not surprising that New York doesn't want to give up its grasp, especially Manhattan. But, you know, if you look at the numbers, the president's filing included a poll of 2,000 people in New York County, which is Manhattan. And what it found was 61% of those people polled think that Donald Trump is guilty of these crimes. Secondly, in 2020, New York City voted by 76% to 23% for Joe Biden. So obviously getting a fair jury panel is impossible. Now, all this court said is, well, let's try to pick a jury and see if we can get 12 people that can be fair and impartial. But I worry that many, because of the high-profile nature of this case, are going to want to be on this jury and aren't going to be honest with the court during jury selection.
I would be worried, too, because they're all going to write books afterwards and give interviews and have their moment of fame. You know, these people that hate Trump were willing to lie, no question about it, because guess what? They're going to lie for a prosecution that'll never happen. All right, they go on there. Yeah, I like Donald Trump. I voted for him once. Maybe we don't have any proof of that. Okay, fine. And you're on there on the trial, but then what you really are is Michael Moore reincarnated, somebody who maybe had more salads than Michael Moore would have had. And you find yourself on there and you can make history. I helped convict the first president ever. Then you have a great story. That's my worry. What about the other cases? On the immunity case, does the president have immunity from all prosecution? Well, Jack Smith has gone crazy on this. He thinks it's a big delay topic. And he's urging the U.S. Supreme Court to reject Trump's immunity claim. They will. Let them make their case first, Jack Smith. What's the rush? You got to embarrass yourself like you did with John Edwards and overcharge and overpush and have everything reversed or end up in a hung jury? Meanwhile, Jack Smith says this: the effective functioning of the presidency does not require that a former president be immune from accountability for his alleged violations in a federal criminal court or law. Now, I can't argue the immunity case. I mean, if a president went out and just started shooting people, he'll be prosecuted. But if he went out there and built a wall or took a wall down and destroyed or affected a community for the worse, can he be sued? Now the answer seems to be yes. What about the documents case? Judge Cannon rescheduled Trump's classified documents hearing for this Friday at 2 o'clock in Fort Pierce. He doesn't have to be there, but he'll have his co-defendants there, Walt Nauta and Carlos de Oliveira. So these are some of the guys that help Trump out on a daily basis and think he's got some information. So what they want to do with Joe Biden, because he had the Robert Hur investigation, if you read it, you realize when it comes to the documents, how bad and irresponsible the president has acted, not 1 year, not 4 years, over the course of 40 years. And they said, you know, why didn't you prosecute? He said, well, he's too old and basically senile to prosecute. He'll come off sympathetic. So they say, hey, can we hear the tapes? They go, no, here's the transcripts of the president's give and take that led us to believe that as bad as he's been, you can't prosecute him. So James Comer says, yeah, I'd just like to hear the tapes myself. They said no. Why? Because they said no because you're using it for political purposes, and we don't want to do that. Well, put it this way. It's not up to you. I didn't think. Carlos Urreta, an assistant attorney general, says the committee's reaction is difficult to explain in terms of any lack of information or frustration of any information or investigation given the Department of Actual Conduct. We are therefore concerned that the committees are disappointed not because you didn't receive information, but because you did. We urge the committees to avoid conflict rather than seek it. The department is concerned that the committee's particular focus on continuing to demand information that is cumulative of information we already gave you. What the president and Mr. Hur's team said in the interview indicates that the committee's interest may not be in receiving information in service of legitimate oversight or investigation, but as to serve a political purpose. Maybe people, the voters, need to find out, because they're not going to sit there and read 50 or 100 pages of dialogue if their president can keep it together mentally for the next 4 years. That's why they let it out. I know why they don't want to let it out, but that's why they should let it out for people to find out. And if Joe Biden is so upset saying, how dare they characterize me as old? Well, let's hear it. I read some of the transcript. It is maddening. You ask a question and he goes off on 20 tangents. And Robert Hur would say, yeah, Mr. President, back to my question. Some of it was intentional and some of it, to me, just like an old man just riffing. Crazy, right? When we come back, I'll take your calls, and then I'll welcome in Victoria Sports at the bottom of the hour. This week is going to be a big week for Speaker Johnson, especially I said this yesterday. It's D-Day week for him. He's got to put out legislation, maybe standalone for Ukraine. It is going to tick off Chip Roy. It's going to tick off Marjorie Taylor Greene and others. Will it be enough to try to oust him? I think Democrats would then go ahead and save him. Personally, you listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We just went through an impeachment attempt on the President of the United States that was started with a source that Republicans used that was in communication with Russian intelligence. So you have not just the bottom bench here. You have the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, Representative Comer, take quote-unquote evidence, an account from someone who was working with the Russian intelligence and tried to impeach and remove the President of the United States over it. This is serious.
She is dreaming. I think she's talking about Tony Bobulinski. He is not in touch with Russia. There's no part of that Hunter Biden scheme that was Russian-related, except Hunter Biden was naked on drugs with guns and hookers. All right? And now we want to know how the business dealer was dealing with his dad. That's about it. His dad was, I know, the president. So go on, Stephen Colbert, who suddenly used to have a late night show, used to take over for, he took over for Letterman, who once in a while would be dead serious and have a serious guest on. But for the most part, was always trying to poke fun. Stephen Colbert has lost all that. And that's why Greg Gutfeld beats him every on a nightly basis. Bob was on WABC in Trumbull, Connecticut. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Brian, how did it get so bad? You're a man of history. How did it happen?
What gets so bad?
Well,
everything?
Yeah, everything. And you got all this kangaroo stuff in courts against Donald Trump. You got, I mean, these people that vote Democrat and let those people must hate their children, hate their grandchildren. It's going to, and it ain't heaven. They're going the other way.
All right, Bob, you know, thanks.
When did it start?
Well, we know when it started. It really started for me. You know, I guess people are turning to Watergate. But after Watergate, we had a period where things settled down a little bit. And then you just had a very good president, the end of the Cold War. But I think with Bill Clinton and the impeachment, the personal behavior that he had, maybe going to Republicans went too far. Then there was the pushback after Iraq. They started saying that George Bush lied his way into war. Oh, excuse me? Lied? Okay, you might not think they might not have weapons of mass destruction. But Al Gore and Bill Clinton were saying that he had weapons of mass destruction. He certainly acted like he had weapons of mass destruction. So then people stopped trusting each other. And then Barack Obama came in and went on his apology tour. That jarred everybody. Then jammed down Obamacare down our throats on a pure partisan level. And I was like, well, that wasn't cool. And then vilified John McCain in order to win re-election, to Mitt Romney, in order to win re-election. You made him to be a white supremacist who put his dog on top of his car in order to kill him on his luggage rack. And then we thought, well, that was out of bounds. And I think it just got worse. When Donald Trump came in, he just exasperated everything by pulling out the faults, going after Hillary Clinton, finding out what she was up to, having James Comey blow her up and Donald Trump finish her off, never admitting they lost an election. If I was to go back, I also think there's a lot of people didn't trust the result of Bush and Gore and didn't want the Supreme Court deciding that on a partisan level. Meanwhile, they recounted Florida. The president won. President Bush won it. But at the time, 537 votes was the difference between the two. And a lot of people were bitter from that. And then the midterms happened after 9/11. They didn't gain any seats. So, I mean, it's all these little things. And Donald Trump brings out a lot of people hate him. A lot of people love him. and have just brought out the polarization. Huge. So all the stuff that was happening between the Bushes and the Clintons fractured big time. And don't just say it's Donald Trump. I mean, when you have a Speaker of the House rip up the State of the Union address in front of the world and tear up the script and then make up a Russia investigation to distract from irresponsible behavior that Hillary Clinton displayed as Secretary of State, I think that, and then you have the FBI and all these McCabe and Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, then people start distrusting the intelligence apparatus. And now we just kind of at each other's throats. But I think it's all eminently fixable. And I think it will be fixed. But people just got to calm down. Start calling balls and strikes. You know, like some Trump says, fine. But don't make it the end of the world. Same thing with Biden.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I believe that Speaker Johnson will bring up support for the supplemental appropriations for Ukraine, for Taiwan, for Israel, immediately after completing the work on FISA and FISA's extension. That deadline of April 19th makes it a priority for the first few days that we're back. But Ukraine remains a priority, as does our support for Israel and Taiwan. And yes, I believe he's fully committed to bringing it up to the floor immediately thereafter. And I think that's critical, as it should have been passed months ago.
That is French Hill, the congressman, Republican congressman. He is fully in support, like Congressman Turner, like me, like Lindsey Graham, of getting aid to Ukraine before it's too late. Congresswoman Victoria Sparks used to live there. That's her heritage. She's on the judiciary, a member of the U.S. Commission of Security and Cooperation in Europe. And the only U.S. lawmaker born in Ukraine. Now, Congresswoman, welcome back. So glad you're not retiring. What is your sense on what the future of aid to Ukraine is?
Well, it's an unfortunately very serious war. It's been very politicized, and Ukraine dragged in on a lot of domestic politics. And I think it's unfortunate that the false choice saying Ukraine doesn't matter to America or support Ukraine with no question asked is one of the many tragedies of the monopoly of narratives. And it's really bad for our country right now.
I'm sorry, could you say that again? Can you say that again? So you believe that the Ukrainian side is corrupt?
No, I'm just saying we have a false choice that either Ukraine doesn't matter or support Ukraine with no question asked. And we're dealing, you know, this is a, you know, the tragedy of narratives. You know, we're dealing with very corrupt and complicated countries where we have a lot of, you know, with very, you know, difficult history. So we need to make sure and learn from mistakes that we've done, including in Afghanistan, that we need to have a proper strategy. We need to have proper oversight. But we understand that Russia and China are on the move, and we cannot just abandon the situation. But we cannot just have blank checks. And I think that's a challenge we have. You either one way or another, but really the proper position in our national interest is to deal with Russia more effectively, force our allies to do better, but also have a strategy. We defeated Soviet Union not by weapons, but actually by economic policy, by energy policy. And if we don't have this multifaceted strategy on top of Russia now advancing in other areas like in hybrid wars and doing propaganda around the world, it's a challenge. So I think, you know, we'll have to provide some lethal aid, at least, you know, in the meantime, and hopefully, you know, some loan. But then, honestly, we'll have to have a better strategy because the war is now in a bad situation.
It's not. But one thing would be great if we weren't slow-walking equipment, weapons.
No, but that's a problem. But that, yeah. We fought with Biden on that. I mean,
and the number two is, why don't you guys put, with your aid, now that they need it so desperately, and it's clearly something Democrats want and most Republicans, why don't you say a requirement is accountability on every follow every bullet to the front line? Maybe there's some people that you guys can sign up that both sides agree are reputable with a military background that could go and see their equipment's getting in the right hands, and there's a strategy maybe working with our people more cohesively. But it seems Ukraine does know how to fight. They do know the land. They are better fighters. If you give them the right equipment, they'll be successful. Your question is, what does success look like? And what do you think it looks like, Congresswoman?
Well, as Listen, I pushed for that, Brian. 2 years ago, I've tried to force this issue and was really dragged through mud by the administration. And I said, we have to do as fast as we can, not as long as it takes. You know, in the long term, dictatorship and aggressive countries with totalitarian regimes have advantages. Democracy have, you know, advantage with speed and agility. And Russia wasn't ready at that time, and we could have really helped Ukraine to tilt the scale. They didn't do it. Now the situation became very complicated, and now it's going to be much longer war and much more complicated war. And I think we need to have now a strategy where we're going to help Ukrainian military, and I separate governments, you know, from the people. Ukrainian people and military are brave and very, you know, courageous fighters. You know, I also separate our people from our government. Our government leaves much to be desired now, too. You know, but I think we need to understand we cannot let Russia move further. But if we want to really put Russia in its place and China, we have to have multifaceted strategy. And unfortunately, this administration doesn't want to deal with key issues like energy policy. How is Russia financing the war? Through bloodshed, they finance it through oil. What did we do with Russian oil? Nothing. You know, they still making a ton of money. They still have access to financial markets around the world, including here. So they have ability to finance this war. So we do need to provide some lethal aid. And if we do it on the loan, that's why I was so disappointed that President Biden didn't invoke lend lease that Congress passed unanimously in the Senate, because it gives better accountability when you do lethal aid through lend lease. It has a better mechanism where Americans sure. have better oversight what's happening.
Yeah, let's do that. And number two, what about the Repo Act? I know Europe has most assets from Russia, but they're talking about $450 billion that we could just take of Russia's and convert it to Ukrainian aid.
That's right. And some assets we have here, we can just start at least with a small percentage here to kind of put pressure on Europeans and then put pressure on Belgium and say, sure. hey, we're doing it. We need to do it. Russia needs to start paying the price. Until Russia starts paying the price, nothing is going to change. And the price is going to be very high for all of us, for the whole international security. You know, and I think this is a very serious situation, but we were not very decisive and strong because the same people that let Russia come take Crimea in eastern Ukraine under President Obama, they're the same in charge right now in Washington, D.C. And it's very difficult when you don't have someone with strategy to win, be able to win, but we cannot lose to Russia and China, and they truly team up now in Iran too.
What are you going to?
A very serious situation.
How do you get that point over to Marjorie Taylor Greene and people like J.D. Vance?
Listen, there are some people that frustrated, and they have a different reasons. And we are a very diverse conference. You will never, you know, get people on board, and you know, everyone. So in any issue, you know, but unfortunately, this has been mishandled by the administration that a lot of domestic issues that were abandoned allow to do more propaganda, and a lot of people being upset. So you cannot blame them for being upset. I understand that, because we do need to secure our country and secure our border. They need to do both. That's what the federal government should be doing. We should have strong national defense that include defending our borders and have strong peace through strength policy and foreign policy dealing with foreign adversaries. We have to do both. But unfortunately, it's been politicized now, and it's becoming a lot of drama because we've been governing through crises for too long, and we have too many now. I think we'll have to have a discussion as Congress. Are we going to start actually doing our job and oversee the money and strategy where the money is spent? And we haven't right. been doing it.
So let me ask you something. Was there resentment at the Pentagon to you putting together monitors to find out where the money's going and the weapons are going? Is there a pushback from the Pentagon or?
Listen, actually, Pentagon was – actually, I work with a lot of people in our military in Pentagon. I actually have much better relationship with Pentagon than the people like Jake Sullivan, who leaves much to be desired. And actually, he stole a lot of ads. You know, he was stealing it. Approvals. He was the one who slow work went and actually did a lot of things that our military believe it should have been otherwise. So I had a much tougher time dealing with administration because I think a lot of people in our military understand the situation and understand the policies that needs to happen. But unfortunately, this administration is full of people with fearless everywhere, on every front, including, you know, just recently on all, every foreign policy issue, whether it's Israel or Ukraine.
So what do you think is possible, Victoria? Do you think it's possible to get past the Donbas region? Do you think it's possible to get Crimea back?
Well, listen, I think that is going to be a big fight, you know, that the Ukrainians have to do. You know, I think, you know, Russia really violated. If you remember, Ukraine gave up nuclear weapons in exchange for territorial integrity. And we were one of the signers of Budapest Memorandum in 93. So I think, you know, that when it happened under Obama, we should have done something when they start moving into Crimea. So it's going to be very difficult because what Russia does every time they take territories, they try to put a lot of Russians and put a lot of populations there. They understand very well that's how they're going to be controlling that. So it's going to be very difficult, you know, dealing with Crimea. But, you know, what they're dealing with eastern Ukraine, you know, Russia cannot just allow it to do what they're doing. They cannot just go into other countries and kill a bunch of people for their personal agenda, monies and
right.
egos. I mean, it's truly what's happened under Hitler, and Russia is allowed to do that.
It's nuts. And I think India's got to be pressured, too. I think that China, I guess we're trying to, but we don't have much leverage there. But there's other places we are. Turkey, who are reeling now politically. Congresswoman Victoria Spartz, glad you're sticking around. Thanks so much for joining me today, and hopefully we get aid to your country this week.
Well, listen, I think that's something that's in our national interest, but we also cannot have blank checks, and we have to be much smarter with that. And I hope more people on the conservative side, you know, start supporting me on these issues, because that's something that we need to be smarter.
I agree with you, Congresswoman. Thanks so much. You should be a point person through this. When we come back, we're going to do a simulcast with Stuart Varney, then take your calls. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Stuart Varney is going to put us on in a second, and at the back end, we'll be able to take some of your phone calls, but it's always great to simulcast on that great channel, FBN, one of the fast-growing channels in all of cable, and a sister network of FNC. Also, just a quick note, if you have your phone in front of you or you're listening right now, if you go to watch on the bottom of the app, you just click on that and you keep swiping until you get the Fox News Radio or Fox Business, or you could start, or you could just click on the headsets if you're running or if you're in a car where you can't, you just want to listen. So let's listen now to Stuart Varney as he introduces us.
The Department of Justice refused to hand over the audio tapes of Biden's interview with former special counsel Robert Hur. It seems to me they'll do anything to cover up Biden's cognitive disabilities. What do you say on that?
Well, a couple of things. I read the transcript. It is painful. It is so painful. He does not stay on any subject. And you hear Robert Hur and his staff just saying, well, that's very interesting, Mr. President. Maybe I'll try that, but can you get back to the question? And I got halfway through the transcript, and I wanted to shoot myself. So to hear it, him meandering like this over the course of hours. By the way, in the back of my mind, what must he be thinking knowing October 7th was taking place and the massacre was happening in Israel? 1,200 people plus are dead. Hamas is responsible. Hostages taken. And he's just meandering, reflecting on his life with Robert Hur, trying to get off the topic, unable to explain how everything got in his house, unable to say where 40 years of intelligence got there, almost saying in a smug way, hey, you know, I didn't take the stuff, but when I wrote down top secret material and kept it on my index cards and left with it, didn't really know it was going to be a problem, but that's what he had. Well, is it true, Mr. President, that you said to your ghostwriter, look at the intelligence documents I have. I guess they know they don't. I don't think anyone knows I have them. He had no good answer for that. But to hear it on audio would be detrimental. And I think that the attorney general is going to come back and say, hey, this is all politics. I gave you the transcript. I don't care what you do. I'm not giving it to you. And I think that's where it ends.
That's where it ends. My Lord, the Republicans are going to subpoena the tapes, but whether they get them or not, that's another story. Change the subject. I'm interested in this one. 18 million people tuned in to watch this year's women's NCAA basketball championship, Iowa, South Carolina. That's the largest audience for any basketball game, including men's, women's, college, professional, since 2019. Women's sports are really heating up this year, aren't they, Brian?
A couple of things are happening. Number one is, you know, you have a personality, just like boxing. People say, is boxing dead? No. We need a Tyson, an Ali, someone to come across and get us to watch. We will do it again. UFC proved that, that people still want that. Also, I think betting helps. You have a competitive game where the networks are there. People can bet on it. They'd be interested. Number two is we just like to know who they are. If you could tell me the players, I'm not a basketball aficionado where I want to look at the quality of the game and how the coach's scheme plays. But if you could tell me about the players and why I should care, I'm watching. And that's what they did by pure the greatness of their play and the fact that we could follow the same teams up again a year ago. And I think it's phenomenal. Keep in mind, we thought we were there in 95, 96 when they launched two new indoor basketball leagues, WBL and the WNBA and the ABL. One fell apart. The WNBA didn't get traction. And a lot of those players are now commentators like Rebecca Lobo. Carol Walters is in the role. Jen Rosati is a coach. And so is Dawn Staley, the best coach in the league right now, undefeated team. So we thought we had it in the mid-90s. My hope is that women watch. I need girls to watch and women to watch. The guys will watch anything. But now we need women to watch and girls to grow up saying, Mom, sorry, there's a game on. I'm staying inside. Or can you bring me to Madison Square Garden to watch the Liberty play? When we hear that from 7, 8, and 12-year-olds, then I know we made it.
You know, the National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics, the governing body for smaller colleges, they banned transgenders in women's sports. I call that a step ahead, a good step forward for women's sports. What say you?
I'd say they care about women. They care about girls' sports. If you care about that, that should be your first priority. With the whole transgender, that's a personal decision you make. Unfortunately, you're not going to be eligible to play. The NCAA's got to show the courage the NAIA did and just step up and say, we're making a rule. That's it. If you don't like it, I am sorry. You could sue us, but you'll be wrong. And no coach can be forced to take a player on that they don't want to or play that person. And coaches need to come together, too. The coaches' associations would go a long way to banding together and saying this is not right. Dawn Staley set everybody back on Saturday when she said what she said, saying
she
that it's
indeed.
Okay.
She was under pressure, but she did say it. That's true. Hey, Brian, thanks a lot. We'll see you again real soon. Thank
we'll
you, Brian.
Soon. Thank you. Hey, Mike, listen on WNDB. Mike, what's on your mind, Mike?
Hey, Brian. Back when the guy wanted to know why the country's going down the drain, you missed it. You did a good job of trying. But the fact of the matter is, even PBS knows this, that in the Obama administration, Brian, the press fell in love with Obama. And we have lost the press in this country. I hate to say it, Brian. I know you're part of them, but you do, and you do a great job. Love your show. 97% of the press donates to one party. How are they going to write their articles, do their segments on TV, and all the other stuff, Brian? We lost the country when we lost the watchdog press. Our founders knew it, and it happened. And all the press are Democrats, and they cannot write the truth anymore.
Mike, a lot of the stuff you said I agree with. I would say this, through time, there were Republican newspapers in the Civil War. There were Democratic newspapers in the Civil War. We've always had somewhat of a partisan press, and we've always had a situation where we're always grinding at each other's eyes. Jefferson and Hamilton, famously. Adams and Jefferson as well. Burr and Hamilton shooting each other. We've always had this blood sport with politics. And Reagan dealt with the same thing. Bush has dealt with the same thing. But what you do is you do the right thing. You bring the country in the right direction. And people will realize you get no ratings, you get no buyers if you're writing things that are counter to what you want. They tried to destroy Trump, and he got more popular. I think that was a big lesson for the press. They're going to learn it. If he goes ahead and wins, that'll be the best thing to happen to our country, even if you're a Democrat. It'll force news directors to say, we have to reevaluate it because no one's listening to us anymore, except to this show and to this network, of course.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Wow, busy Tuesday. Thanks so much for being here. A lot going on now. It's interesting. When watching this trial, that's happened with the Oxford High School shooting, death where this lunatic kid goes in and just shoots four people dead he didn't like, warned his parents ahead of time. They see the text messages. They decide to charge the parents. Parents are going to jail. The kid's in jail for life. The Crumblies. And now the victim impact statement's coming up. And now we'll find out how much the parents will be in. You just wonder in the big picture if this is going to be a new trend. How many people have just ignored signals and said, not my problem, even though it's my kid? We'll see. I'm not a lawyer, but I just think that people are so fed up with these senseless shootings and hearing about the warning signs that happened before. This hour, going to be joined by John Hanna, former National Security Advisor to Vice President Dick Cheney. I want to talk about what's happening with Israel and how they seem to be losing the PR war and how they're being pushed back, finishing off Hamas and Rafah while they're trying to work out some unbalanced hostage swap. With me right now is Governor Chris Sununu, one of the best guys you'll ever meet. And sadly, he's going to be he's not running for office. I assume he's temporarily retiring from politics. Governor, welcome back.
Well, I'm the guy that's retiring so I can go make some money.
Yeah, but you were making money. Weren't you making money in the ski world? Weren't you making tons of money?
If you want to make $10 million in the ski world, you better start with $100 million because you know there's no money in that game, my friend. There's no money. I was a civil engineer. I love the ski business, but it's a tough one, and public service is public service. So no, look, if you're accepting resumes, I'll send you something. But I don't know where I'm going to be in the next year.
But what do you want to do?
You know, private sector stuff. I mean, I really do love working with businesses. And if there's anything businesses need help with, it's avoiding political pitfalls, right?
Yep.
I mean, they all seem to be stepping in it nowadays. So we've worked with a lot of businesses here. And if I can be helpful on that front or strategic management, I mean, I've obviously managed a multi-billion-dollar industry, if you will, here in New Hampshire and have the engineering experience. And so I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm open for anything. I really am.
I mean, I can't imagine what your Rolodex looks like. I know it's an old reference, but between the people you met and the people you've helped, because you got to run for office every 2 years in New Hampshire. So you're always proving yourself, right?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, four terms is a lot in New Hampshire. It's not. It's only 8 years, but it is constant, and it just wears on you. Wears on the family too, you know. And you know, we take pride in small, efficient government here. And so again, that kind of means you want turnover. And we got a couple great Republican candidates that I think could potentially sit in this corner office. So the timing just works out for a variety of reasons.
All right, a couple of things. If we look at things that matter most, according to this snapshot in time, Fox News poll to the voters, the registered voters. Economy, 61% say it's number one. 53% say election integrity is their number one. 48% say immigration. Fifth is health care, 46%. And sixth is abortion, 41%. I thought abortion was one or two in the midterms. What do you think that says about this upcoming election?
Well, I think, if anything, that ties a lot into what you saw with President Trump's statement, in that it's a state's issue. People are understanding it's a state's issue. You may make some tweaks at a state level here and there, but it isn't like everything fell apart when Roe v. Wade got overturned. You have the issue in Texas. You have an issue in this state, an issue in that state. And those states will make tweaks, and they'll adjust, and the voters will decide where that's going to go state by state. But I think most people understand this is really no longer a national issue with, you know, allowing abortion. The Democrats are saying, well, abortion for everyone up until 9 months. Republicans, you know, and the pro-lifers that want to put, you know, massive bans on things. That's just not going to happen at the federal level. So in terms of the issues, if people vote with their – it's the economy, stupid, right? You know, people vote with their pocketbook, so it's going to be inflation. It's going to be the border. And those are two issues that right now the Republicans really lead on in terms of wanting to fix this thing, wanting to get it right and give people opportunity, you know, to have a little economic freedom. $1.3 trillion? Now in credit card debt? In credit card debt, $1.3 trillion, that's crazy. And when people, if I can, Brian, when people say, well, we're voting on the economy, people sit down at their kitchen table, and that means they vote on what they owe. How much do I owe? My mortgage, and can I pay it? My credit cards, my bills, my kids, can I afford that? Well, if I can't, then I'm doing worse than I was yesterday, so I want change. So when it comes to the economy, it's not about macroeconomics. I kind of wish it was, frankly, but people vote with what's happening at their kitchen table, and they're not happy right now, and Biden has a lot to blame there.
All right, I want you to hear what President Trump said yesterday that got Lindsey Graham upset, as well as Mike Pence. Cut four.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land, in this case, the law of the state. Many states will be different. Many will have a different number of weeks, or some will have more conservative than others, and that's what they will be. At the end of the day, this is all about the will of the people. You must follow your heart or, in many cases, your religion or your faith.
So he's state by state. Now, Lindsey Graham has said, why don't you just name 15 weeks? Why don't you just pick up 15 weeks, say that's what we're going to get behind right there. What do you think about the president's decision?
He's spot on. He really is. This is, we wanted to overturn Roe v. Wade, and they did it. It's a state's issue now. Lindsey Graham, if I may, has been one of the worst messengers on the abortion issue nationally for Republicans. He's the I think in October of 22, you know, he came out and started saying, we need national abortion bans, which just scares the heck out of everybody. So whether 15 weeks is palatable to people on a national level or not, just pushing it out there drives a national discussion about what's going to be banned and what isn't. And as Republicans, we are terrible at the messaging, right? It doesn't matter how good of an idea is. If you don't have the messaging, you're not going to get people behind you. You're going to lose those suburban moms. You're going to lose some of those independent voters, a lot of which are now coming back towards Trump on the national side, right? Don't lose them. And so I think Trump is making the right messaging approach on this issue. We don't want it as fired up as it was in 2022 because we lost on it. That's a big part of why we lost. And so the fact that it has fallen to number six,
right.
Great, let it be a state's issue. And let's talk about things that we really can change at the national level, which is, again, fiscal responsibility, the border, all those types of things that really you could get 60 votes for.
So, Governor, for the longest time, we never talked abortion on the network at all. Nobody wanted to talk about abortion. Here it is, Roe v. Wade, pro-life, pro-choice, whatever it is. We just said, you know, that's so contentious. Let people fight it out in the courts. And it didn't. Now it's out. So I'll go further. Now, do you believe the Republicans deserve an answer when they ask Democrats, what is the week that you're looking to end abortion rights? Is it 12? Is it 15? Is it 22? Is it 24? Now they don't want to answer what that week is. So President Trump said they want to finish. They want to have abortion up until the ninth month. Well, if you don't want that, what is the week? When you go into a debate, if someone is pro-choice or pro-abortion across from you and you're at the podium, do you push that?
Well, I think Trump should. I know, and that's where Biden is painting himself into a very difficult corner, because if he's going to start putting out all these ads on it and try to paint Republicans in a certain way, then Trump is going to have every ability to say, look, I'll let the states decide. What do you think it's going to be? And Biden's not going to have an answer. You're going to see him flip all around the place, because he's going to try to appease the pro-abortion ultra-progressives, but not scare everybody. And so I think they're making a grave mistake. I think you bring up a really good point. I don't think Republicans should go too hard on that message, because again, we typically don't do it well. But in the moment of a debate, in the moment of the question, that's where I think Democrats and particularly President Biden could get incredibly flustered and cause themselves some real problems.
If you think they're going to have a debate between these two?
I don't know. What do you think? I mean, I really don't know. I would say I think there'll be too much public pressure not to. I think people understood, you know, with Trump leading so much, or he didn't want to show up and he got away with it. But to have two presidents, I mean, it's not just two nobodies, it's two presidents actively say we're not going to debate each other.
But Trump wants to.
That's a problem. Trump wants to, and I think Biden will be pushed into it. Yeah, I think he'll be pushed into it. His numbers will plummet if he doesn't. See, Trump saying he doesn't want to debate, you know, that's kind of his brashness, his brand and all of that. As frustrating as it was for me, I think he should have debated. But that's on par with his brand. Biden not being willing to debate just looks scared, right? Just looks fearful. And that's going to be a problem.
I think that if it's neck and neck, he doesn't do it because there's too much loss. It's not, you know, Governor Sununu against Governor Nikki Haley, two people who don't understand the issues who may or may not have differences, because I just think that he lost his fastball, his changeup, his sinker, his knuckleball, and you're going to go out there with nothing. Unless he's trailing by a lot. That's my view in April, but it's going to be six more months of sparring. So I want to bring you to this, cut eight.
Tens of millions of people's debt was literally about to get canceled. But then some of my Republican friends and elected officials and special interests sued us, and the Supreme Court blocked us. But that didn't stop us. No, I mean it sincerely. We continue to find alternative paths to reduce student debt payments that are not challengeable. And altogether, my administration has taken the most significant action to provide student debt relief ever in the history of this country.
He's at $4 billion and counting. He's defined the Supreme Court in doing it. He has no right to do this. This is flat out buying votes. And I would say the same thing if it was Trump. I go, you got to be kidding me. You just can't forgive debt. And Trump wouldn't do it because he's a finance guy. You're going to do car deals next? You're going to forgive people's mortgages? It's not Biden's fault or credit how expensive college is. I didn't tell some parent to take out a loan. I didn't tell some student to go to an expensive school. What do you think about this, Governor Sununu?
He's going to lose more votes than he buys. He's going to tick off more people because everybody understands what's going on, right? The farmer that's working his ass off in Iowa, whose kid didn't get to go to college, now has to pay for the college for the lawyer in New York. That's crazy. Like, nobody thinks that that's a good idea. And who's he buying votes from? The younger generation that typically doesn't vote, or when they do are already voting for him. So he's just going to really, really upset those suburban families and those independents, those hardworking families that built this country, that already feel like the elitists of Washington are standing on the shoulders of those families that built this country and telling them how to live their lives. Oh, and now, by the way, you got to pay for my elitist rich friend's college. Like, that's crazy. So if they think they're buying votes, I think it's just going to have another rubber band effect. Let's remember, man, Biden got elected in 20 as the moderate, right? He was supposed to bring some moderation here and all that. And a lot of us who knew the real story were afraid of all this progressiveness. But the average American bought into him as a moderate. And now he's just tripling down on this ultra-socialist progressive stuff. People don't want it. They're not buying it. And ultimately, it's going to hurt him. It's a bad policy that actually costs – this isn't the only thing that's going to cost him the election. Put it as number four behind inflation and the border and all the other nonsense he deals with. My only hope is this, that maybe by the time – between the time he made that speech and the time he implements, he just forgets, you know, which is, you know, 50-50.
I don't think so, as people push him to do it. So Congressman Jared Golden, a Democrat from Maine, said, I oppose the president's first student debt forgiveness. I'm looking at this one. John Tester, Democrat, is pretending to be a moderate from Montana, says, I made it clear to President Biden that he's opposed to this blanket loan cancellation. But hopefully people like Tim Sheehy, who's running against him, understand that. If John Tester had stood up like Manchin has, even though Manchin has gotten all the way, but he definitely is a moderate like Sinema did. But John Tester continues to run as a moderate, but he votes with Joe Biden all the time and Barack Obama all the time. So famously, Governor, I think you're a very fair-minded guy, but you were not in on Trump. Do you feel better about his candidacy now than when you were backing Nikki Haley 1 month later?
Well, sure. Look, I mean, post-primary, I said, yeah, of course we're gonna back Trump. We're going to back the Republican
ticket. That's why CNN stopped booking you.
Yeah, I'm not looking for bookings. They call me. Everyone calls me. They're waiting for me to blow something up and use a bad word on air or something to get some ratings. But no, look, we're getting behind Trump. I think the bulk of not just the Republican Party, but independents and hardworking Americans and veterans, they're all getting behind because it's not just about policy. It's about a culture change. That's what people are really voting for when they move Biden out of Washington. They want a culture change in this. Elitist, as I was saying, we're going to tell you how to live your lives, what pronouns to use, how woke you have to be, you know, all of that kind of nonsense is just un-American. It really is, and people are standing up for it. So that's the culture change. I think, Lord knows we fought hard in the primary, right? We wanted to make sure Republicans had an alternative. Republican Party stood up. Nikki stayed in long enough to make sure that everyone, that the party as a whole had a vote. They chose Trump. Okay, fine. We'll get behind him. In places, as we were talking on the abortion issue, places like New Hampshire or Texas or wherever it is, the state elections are going to be pivotally important. I mean, really important. The governorships and the state houses and the legislatures, so many of those. Let's not forget about those races. This just isn't the presidential race. So much happens down ballot and down ticket where we really have to spur that get out the vote effort. That's what I'm going to be doing here in New Hampshire, of course, and I think a lot of folks are. So it's a ticket issue. It's a what establishment would you rather have, the Republican establishment or the Democrat establishment? I don't like either when it comes to the word establishment, but I'll take a Republican administration eight days a week. I mean, the policies coming out – watch tomorrow, by the way. Watch what the EPA does tomorrow on drinking water standards. They're gonna propose something that is actually technically not feasible on PFAS and all these stringent things that come out that will not just drive costs on taxpayers, but there's very little justification for it. It's those types of policies that never cross Congress's desk, a president never sees, but it, from an administration standpoint, has huge impact on families, on the cost of living, on their health, on their ability just to live their lives as Americans. So I'll take a Republican administration any day of the week, and I think most of America will too.
So, Governor, how bad were things between Nikki Haley and Trump behind the scenes? And are you surprised that neither side has reached out to this point?
Nah, look, I've been in this business long enough to know that things can get personal. They have a long relationship that, you know, definitely precedes me. They've worked with each other. They had a hard race. Nothing we haven't seen before. I mean, we'll see where it ultimately goes. But Trump's going to be successful because of Trump, not because someone endorses him, right? He's his own.
But does he need Nikki Haley's people? Does he need Nikki Haley?
No. No, he doesn't need Nikki so much. I mean, Nikki can do what she wants. She's independent. She's smart. But Nikki, most of Nikki's voters are going to come over. I mean, they really are. Because if it's effectively a two-party system. This third-party stuff isn't going anywhere. And if you tend to lean Republican and you choose not to vote, you're voting for the Democrats. Mathematically, that's how it works. You're giving the Democrats what they want. So folks are going to come out and understand that these issues are real, they're serious. And I think at the end of the day, a lot of the time heals a lot of stuff, and there's going to be a lot of time between now and November for not just Nikki Haley and Chris Christie, but all those voters that have been very frustrated with Trump, as I have been as well, to get on board and really say, okay, you know, we have to do what's right for America.
All right, Governor Chris Sununu, soon to be out of a job, but he's going to have people lined up to hire him. Governor, thanks so much.
Thanks, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Always great. Back in a moment.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Trump's going to be successful because of Trump, not because someone endorses him, right? He's his own.
But does he need Nikki Haley's people? Does he need Nikki Haley?
No. No, he doesn't need Nikki so much. I mean, Nikki can do what she wants. She's independent. She's smart. But Nikki, most of Nikki's voters are going to come over. I mean, they really are, because it's effectively a two-party system. This third-party stuff isn't going anywhere. And if you tend to lean Republican and you choose not to vote, you're voting for the Democrats. Mathematically, that's how it works. You're giving the Democrats what they want. So folks are going to come out and understand that these issues are real, they're serious. And I think at the end of the day, a lot of the time heals a lot of stuff, and there's going to be a lot of time between now and November.
That was pretty cool. That was Governor Chris Sununu moments ago, to me, making news, because he says that the president doesn't really need Nikki Haley to endorse him, but he thinks Nikki Haley's people are coming because they got to vote for him. And doesn't really sound like he's optimistic they're going to speak again, but he feels like those people are going to come. And there's a lot of people out there. In fact, Joe Biden's going for them. He says those Nikki Haley voters, President Trump is not courting. Chris Sununu, who was right by her side through New Hampshire and through Super Tuesday, said they're coming. So that's fascinating. But Chris is true to his word. He said, I don't think Trump is the best nominee, but if he wins, I'll back him. And he's doing that. And Chris, by the way, Trump attacked him, too. But for Chris, it's not personal. But it's really not personal. Give him great credit.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The president initially said he was rock solid in support of Israel's efforts here. Have the protesters won at the White House?
No, I think this is a tactical disagreement. What I believe President Biden has been saying directly to Prime Minister Netanyahu is, before you go in at scale and try to finish the job against Hamas, make sure that you allow for humanitarian aid.
So that is Senator Coons. You know, he's tight with Biden. He tries to make sense of what Biden's saying and tries to define his policy. But he's like many Democrats. They're out when it comes to backing up Benjamin Netanyahu and Israel. They're seeing some domestic blowback. I get it. They could probably, I don't know, I've never conducted an intense urban warfare. No one's asked me to go to a military college and instruct a class either. At least I know that. I wish some of these senators would understand their limitations, because nobody ever wanted to go into Gaza. It was because of October 7th, Israel had no choice. But once in, they're fighting for their survival. I don't know why people have a hard time understanding that. John Hanna, former National Security Advisor for Vice President Dick Cheney, joins us now. John, welcome back. Your thoughts about what Senator Chris Coons just said?
Well, I just think it's emblematic, Brian, of the unraveling of the Democratic Party's support for Israel writ large. I think it's the signs of one of our major parties, the bipartisan support for Israel, breaking down, which I think is a major, major long-term worry. I think the president has been strong for getting close to 6 months, and I give him some credit for that. But he has now clearly been convinced by his political advisors that that he needs to now put the screws to Israel and give Hamas potentially, and behind Hamas, an Iranian alliance system that is in direct competition with America, to give them a major victory, not just over Israel, but over an American-led alliance system that's trying to figure out a better future for the Middle East.
So if you think Coons is bad, listen to this, former Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Cut 36.
I would hope that Netanyahu, he's only interested in his own political survival. Does that sound familiar? And that's just the way it's been. It's a tragedy. Netanyahu is a tragedy. We all love Israel. We want Israel to be able to defend itself, but also to maintain its the respect it commands in the world. I don't think he's in furtherance of that. I think that Chuck Schumer was right when he said there should be an election.
How inappropriate were Schumer's comments, her backing it up and blaming it on a guy, when Benny Gantz would do the same exact thing, according to both of our reporters on the ground, and nobody's talking about what actually happened to Israel. They're getting hit from the Houthis, Hezbollah, Hamas, and on a different level, Iran.
Yeah, no, it's really quite disgraceful and dishonorable, Brian, this Democratic onslaught against Israel just 6 months after the darkest day in that nation's history, at a time when our most important, closest ally in the Middle East is engaged in a war with a genocidal terrorist group right on its borders, to now be throwing Israel under the bus, I think is just disgraceful. These people, you know, to paraphrase Churchill, these people feel like they have a choice between electoral defeat in November and dishonor, and they're choosing dishonor. And I think they're going to get an electoral defeat, because I don't think the American people like this wavering lack of leadership, this timidity on the part of the United States in the face of a genocidal terrorist group attacking one of our best and closest right. and most reliable allies.
So, John, you're in with Dick Cheney when they're doing this urban warfare with Fallujah and Ramadi. And we know it went on in Iraq and the challenges in Afghanistan. It was not traditional, the World War One type fighting we see with Ukraine and Russia. It's if this country went to school on the challenges of terrorism. Do you think Israel could have been more precise in their attack from what you know? Do you think that some of these civilian casualties could have been avoided?
But I'm sure that mistakes happen, Brian, but this is not a function of a military that doesn't follow the laws of armed conflict. It's not a result of evil intentions. It is the reality of modern urban warfare. U.S. combat history over the last 20 years is replete with instances of tragic mistakes, accidents that happen, even to the best militaries in the world, including the American military. So this is really the height of hypocrisy. Israel is facing a battlefield in Gaza that is orders of magnitude even more difficult than what our forces faced in places like Mosul and Raqqa and Fallujah. They not only are fighting enemies above the ground, they are fighting underneath the ground in 300 to 400 miles of tunnels funded by U.S. taxpayer funds and international aid that has been stolen by Hamas using human shields. If we cave to this barbarity of Hamas and its strategy of killing not only as many Israelis as possible, but as many Palestinians as possible. We will rue the day because it means that there is no civilized Western military that can fight a battle against genocidal terrorism without eventually losing breath and losing the support of the democratic, free democratic world.
John Hanna with us, former National Security Advisor to Vice President Dick Cheney. John, I 100% agree with you. I'm just trying to make the conversation more interesting by pushing back a little bit. But I'm going to go ahead and say that they have to go into Rafah. And Netanyahu says, I got a day and we got to go. Now, I saw Admiral Kirby over the weekend said we've told them not to. Others have said we told them. So this is a black and white situation. If they go in, they're defying the U.S. They have to go in. How could you possibly let their version of bin Laden, Sinwar, sit there with the hostages while they negotiate in bad faith to get him out? Your thoughts about what's going to be happening, I imagine, over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, no, the Israelis are going to go in. We'll see whether this hostage deal comes together. That might put things off for a period of time. But as Benny Gantz, the opposition in Israel, who's part of this national unity government right now, said a few weeks ago, not going to Rafah would be like only putting out 80% of the fire that's tearing down your house. Israel has to go in. It's the difference between an Israeli victory or a Hamas victory. Rafah has got to be done, Brian, and at the end of the day, Israel's going to do it with or without the United States. And to not do it with the United States, I think, would just be an awful, dishonorable message and stamp on the reputation of the United States of America. Yep. That, again, I think the American people will end up punishing Joe Biden for.
Well, I do, but we'll be punished whoever takes the reins next, because look at the message we sent in Afghanistan. Look at the lack of interest in finishing off the Ukraine fight. And now all of a sudden we lose interest because things get tough on the PR end in Israel. America fights for a day or stays with you until the sun goes down. And then we go pretend to be friends with somebody else. It's just a terrible message to send after you guys have spent and administrations have spent maybe 70 years changing things around. And even if you look at the world wars, but looking now at I've got to ask you a projection. You saw the devastating hit on the al-Quds commanders in Syria, in Damascus. And now Iran feels pressure. They also have some militants inside their own country trying to kill their own military. So you know they got some problems. Now they feel pressure to respond. Do you believe that they have a devastating direct attack on Israel queued up?
Listen, they have the largest ballistic missile, drone, and cruise missile fleet in the entire Middle East. Some of those drones are very sophisticated. They clearly can reach Israel. Depending on the kind of swarm attack they might be able to put together that would be multi-directional, I suppose, maybe including Hezbollah, that they could overwhelm Israel's air defenses. But I think, like you say, Iran's got real problem of its own. It's made clear over the last 6 months, while it wants to push and sacrifice as many lives of its proxy forces as it can, it itself, Iran, doesn't want to get into a direct confrontation with Israel or the United States. But I would say that this is exactly the wrong time for America and American politicians to be sending the signal that we're threatening some kind of rupture with Israel. As Iran considers its response here, we don't want to introduce any doubt into its mind that if it oversteps, if it overreaches against Israel or against the United States, Israel and America will be together in an overwhelming response to any Iranian provocations here.
I hope so. And lastly, you know, they do this with the blessing of Iran, Hamas did October 7th. They did it knowing Hezbollah was well on the same page. We know about the meetings that took place in Lebanon, at least, and probably more over in Iran. But did they expect this? Did they expect Israel to go in this deep into Gaza? Did they expect to lose this many fighters? Did they expect to repel and do some damage to Hezbollah like they have and resulting in the killing of those commanders in Damascus? Is this more than Iran wanted, or is this exactly it?
It's got to be a little bit of both for the Iranians and their entire proxy strategy. I think they're given how weak Israel looked before October the 7th, all the divisions inside Israel domestically, the tensions between Netanyahu and Biden before October 7th, I think they thought they might have been able to force a ceasefire on Israel much earlier than this. This 6 months is the longest war Israel has fought since its war of independence at its founding in 1948. I think the Iranians and the entire Iranian axis bet that international pressure, American pressure would have stopped, forced Israel to stop short of defeating Hamas before this. I think that's still their hope. And the more they see these divisions between the United States and Israel, the more they see Biden and the Democratic Party turning on Israel. I think it only gives them hope to hold out, to prolong, to not deliver back the hostages, to keep this war going in the hope that it won't end in Hamas's defeat, but in some kind of historic rupture in relations between the United States and Israel.
The ceasefire deal looks like this. It looks like we are offering through William Burns, give 40 hostages back in exchange for 900 Palestinian prisoners, 100 of which are in for life, which means they have Israel blood on their hands. Would you do that deal?
Listen, the problem the Israelis have, Brian, is that those 253 hostages that got taken at the beginning of this war, that was a massive failure by the IDF and the Israeli government, a failing of their citizens, a real breach in the Zionist promise that Israelis would be able to occupy every inch of their land, and if they got into trouble, that they would be defended by their army. So there's a real moral debt. I think Israel is prepared to pay a very high price to get those people back. And I think the only people that, that can make that decision are the Israelis and their elected representatives. But you've got to say that there's no doubt the price will be high, because if they get 6 weeks of pause, Hamas is going to regroup. They're going to rearm. More Israeli soldiers will get killed. And the longer this war is going to go on, and it will have validated, of course, the strategy of terrorist groups taking hostages, which is a bad signal to send around the world.
John, it's been great talking to you. Thanks so much. And I'll talk to you again, because when this is over, we need somebody who has a clear mind to tell us what the next day looks like, where the Palestinians go.
Thank you, Brian.
And then where we go. John Hanna, thank you. When we come back, I see your calls up there, Jane, Hank, Alex. We'll get to you in just a moment. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Beyond the uncommitted campaign, on the other side of the spectrum, there is an enormous $100 million financed operation to primary every, virtually any sitting member of Congress that calls for a ceasefire. We have to acknowledge and see one another for the pain that we're holding. And once people feel like their concerns have been seen, then we can start the process of coming together. And so right now, these are folks who want to be seen. I think they're using this process to be seen, and it's best that we do that now than for folks to stay home in November.
Will you be voting for Joe Biden?
I will be voting for President Biden in November.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Wow, what a relief. What a great late night show, isn't it? I mean, is this a Rachel Maddow, or is this a late night show full of antics? Stephen Colbert. So Stephen Colbert making sure that Joe Biden has AOC as a voter. And she's saying about the uncommitted votes that these people need to be heard. They need to be heard that they're more into the Palestinians than Americans. Need to be heard in Michigan. Were you asked about that? Death to America? Chanting death to America? You worried about losing Michigan? If you have to, if you're chanting death to America, you better not be voting for me. You better find out exactly who they are. They better have done facial recognition of all those people there, because they could be the next bombers to take out you and your family at the next theater. let alone the people coming across our border. It's insane. Hank, you're in Virginia. Hey, Hank.
Hey, guys. How you doing there?
Good.
I just want to talk about the three presidents that were at Radio City Music Hall the other night.
Go ahead.
They raised a bunch of money. They had, you know, Clinton, you had Biden, and you had Obama. But a lot of people think that those three are responsible for the Ukrainian problem. You have Clinton originally with the Budapest Memorandum, and then you had Obama telling Mitt Romney that the 1980s wants their geopolitics back. And then 12 months later, they invade Crimea. And now you got Joe Biden with this whole mess with it depends if it's a full-blown invasion or minor incursion. So if you look at those three former presidents, they got a lot of responsibility when it comes to all this Ukrainian. I'd like to also say that what you said about Congressman Sparks, she'd be the perfect person to lead this whole this contingency to help out the situation with Ukraine.
Hank, I think she's very sure-headed. She's like, look, they got to be smart about making accountability to make sure this weapons get there, how we're doing it, and what the strategy is. It would be very easy for her to be emotional and say, bail out my homeland. I think she's being very responsible. I love your points. Alex in California. Hey, Alex.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I want to say that Ukraine is in Europe, and Europeans have primary responsibility for funding the war effort. If we go in and help them out every time they need military assistance, that will send the wrong signal. That will tell them that it's okay for the Europeans to spend less than the 2% threshold for NATO.
Don't you think they got the message, though, Alex? Don't you think they're seeing the problems we're having getting weapons there, and they're seeing France and Germany and England? You know, France is very close to the 2%. England's over it. Poland's 3.8. I think they get it. You have a good point. They got to take responsibility. This is their wake-up call. They're going to be buying a ton of weapons from us. The Eastern Europeans get it. Now it's time for the Western Europeans to get it. Overall, we're going to be a lot safer when our allies are armed up. Thanks so much.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.